Ugh, don't you just love that piece? Oh, gosh, I could listen to that all night long. Flower Duet, and that's Yana singing from her album In the Balance. Oh, just beautiful. For such a gorgeous night here on Galveston Island, my name is Carla Wills Brandon, and I'm coming to you live. And this is A Walk to the Other Side, and I'm very glad that you could join me tonight. It's just a few days before Halloween, and so as I look out my window, there are witches hanging from trees, and there are pumpkins lit, and people are stuffing themselves with candy corn downstairs. My family, they just can't get enough of them. And as I look out my window, I see that on my own palm tree, oh my goodness, what have they hung out there now? My kids have hung a black cat. A black cat is hanging from my palm tree. Yes, on Galveston Island, we have lots of palm trees, and a couple of weeks ago, those palm trees were really blowing in the wind. Let me tell you. We had to move all of the furniture from downstairs upstairs and pack up our tarantula and our turtle and our hamster and our black cat and our golden cat and our retriever along with the two kids and climb into the car and get in that mess to get off this island. This island is a very, very interesting place to live, and it's a lot of people like living here because the spirituality here is very open, and people are very accepting of different types of spirituality, and that's what A Walk to the Other Side is going to be about. We're going to be looking at some of those topics that people just don't like to talk about, sadly. Years ago, I made a decision to stop lecturing around the United States about some of the things that I had been very involved with for about 10 years. My first books discussed addiction, relationships, trauma, and though I still practice as a therapist today and work with those issues on a weekly basis, my passion today is to educate people about death and dying. So many people in our culture today have a real hard time with that topic. And so this show is not going to be something down or depressing. What we're going to discuss is we're going to discuss some of the interesting things that researchers like myself are discovering with regards to death and dying. And so I'm hoping that on down the line, there will be those of you who will want to call in and who will want to share. Living here on the island, one of the great things about this place is that people have a lot of ghosts in their house. And since it's Halloween, I thought we might start, instead of being so serious right away, I thought we would talk a little bit about some of the fun things that happen on this island. I look across the street at my friend's house, and in that house, that 100-year-old house, she has an orb that flies around in that house. Now, if you don't know what an orb is, I have a suggestion for you. Plug that word into your search engine, if you have a computer, O-R-B, and then hit search, and then you're going to pull up a whole lot of very interesting information. And you're also going to pull up some pictures. There are people who actually take photographs of orbs. And orbs can be found in very old homes. They can be found in cemeteries. They can also be spotted right before somebody gets ready to pass. Yes. A number of years ago, my father-in-law, bless his soul, he was 82 years old. He was born in France. He actually went back during World War II and after World War II, and he gathered up all of the relatives who were shuffled off to concentration camps. And what he did is he brought them back to the States. And so the family, most of the family, actually did survive. But like a lot of individuals who experience hardship, trauma, loss, and are unable to grieve and move through some of that pain. He was one of these guys who decided that when we die, we just become worm food. That's it. He didn't want to have anything to do with anything that had to do with spirituality. Interestingly enough, he also had a very dark sense of humor. He was a Doctor Who fanatic. I don't know if there are any Doctor Who fanatics out there in the audience, but it was a sci-fi show that was on the public broadcasting channel for years and years, and may still be on. I can remember walking into the house, and he'd be sitting there glued to the TV with his iced tea and some other little nosh watching Doctor Who, but at the same time, he didn't believe in life after death at all. And that's what we're going to talk a lot about on this show. Death is not something to be feared, and so many of us in this culture do fear death. We don't want to talk about it. We avoid cemeteries. We avoid funerals. We don't talk to our children about death and dying. And Pop was just, he was like that. Now, I'm also married to a psychologist. Not only am I a marriage and family therapist, but I'm married to a psychologist. You talk about a scary, scary situation. Two shrinks living under the same roof. My kids, they're always, I always tell my kids when they get upset with me to just put it on their list and take it to the shrink of their choice when they get older. But anyway, we moved my in-laws down to the island about 10 years before they passed. And right before my father-in-law passed, my husband noticed that there was a pastel, beautiful orb floating above his body. And it took him completely by surprise because he's a mashed potatoes and gravy sort of guy. And when he saw this orb, he came to me and he said, "What is this?" And immediately we got on the computer and I showed him pictures of orbs. So on this island, we have a house across the street where there is a blue orb that floats around the house. And the first person to see this orb was a young child about 3 years of age. And the child went running to his mother and said, "Mommy, Mommy, there's a blue ball floating in the house." And my girlfriend, she looked at her son and just blew it off to an overactive imagination. Well, then her skeptical physician husband saw the orb. And so I brought him over and we plugged the word orb into the search engine. And we pulled up the pictures and I said to him, "Is this what you saw?" And he said, "Yes, that's exactly what I saw." Down the street on the other side, we live real close to the Mardi Gras route. We have a big Mardi Gras down here in Galveston. And during Mardi Gras, all the neighbors come out and we all sample each other's gumbo. We go from house to house and just have a good old time. But one of the houses on the Mardi Gras parade route actually has a picture of their ghost, their young daughter, one day saw an old man at the top of the stairs and went running to her mother and said, "Mommy, Mommy, there's an old man at the top of the stairs." And the mom went to the top of the stairs and there was nothing there, and she just blew it off to an overactive imagination. Well, one morning she got up and she saw a man at the top of the stairs. Galveston has a very, very interesting history. You know, as I said, we basically survived Rita. We dropped the tarantula and the hamster and the birds, I forgot about the birds, off at my cousin's house in Houston. And then the family decided that we needed to travel farther away from the coast. And we took off and we ended up in Wimberley, Texas at a dude ranch of all places. It would have been a lot of fun if we hadn't have been so worried about what was going on in Galveston. But Galveston is a place that is very adept to storms. Not only are we very used to our spirits and ghosts down here, and not only do we have even a holiday for spirit activities, and we have ghost tours down here because we have so many old Victorian homes and and old Victorian buildings down on what's called the Strand, which is on the bay side of the island. Galveston is just a long sandbar, and on one side you have rolling waves, and on the other side you have the bay. But we had a horrible storm here in 1900. As a matter of fact, before I got on air, I was looking at some pictures of some of the devastation that took place during that storm, and we were very, very fortunate with Rita. We had a couple of buildings fall down and a little bit of tree damage, but nothing like the 1900 storm. On the block where I live, they stacked the bodies. The storm came in at 140 miles per hour. And it literally washed the island away. And what happened was that 3,000 to 6,000 people died in this storm. And so after the storm left, what happened was when the bodies were gathered, there wasn't enough room in the morgues, and so they lined them up and down the street. And so a lot of the people who live in Galveston and who are open to life after death experiences and who have seen unusual things that go bump in the night believe that some of the spirit activity that we have going on in this island has to do with the storm. When I moved into my house, which is also about 100 years old, I began experiencing what are called after-death communications. In future shows, we're going to be talking more about that. An after-death communication is an unusual experience that we can have with someone after they have passed. And after-death communications come in a variety of forms. And one of the forms they come in is a scent. Maybe there are a few of you out there listening who, after you've experienced the loss of a loved one, maybe you began smelling their perfume. Everything is clear. There hasn't been any scent in the house from this person's perfume or aftershave. Maybe it's even been years since this person passed. And then suddenly you catch a whiff out of nowhere of an unusual smell that's related to the person that passed away. Well, in this house, when we first moved in here, we used to smell rose, a single note of rose. We'd be sitting around watching TV, and all of a sudden, no doors open, no windows open, in would float a single note of rose, and it was just lovely. And in the Victorian days, women used to wear single note perfumes. My next door neighbor lived to be 105. His name was Mr. Harris. And when we moved into this neighborhood, I used to take gumbo over to Mr. Harris. And Mr. Harris was one of those Galvestonians who survived the great storm of 1900. He survived because his mother strapped him to a chest, a very, very heavy chest. And what people did on this island when that storm came through is they would chop holes in the floors of their houses. Because as the water filled, if they had holes in the floors of the houses, the water would not wash the houses off their foundation, but the water would come in and it would weigh the houses down. So Mr. Harris's mother was a very smart woman, and what she did is she strapped him to a chest, and he survived up in the attic, as did other members of his family. And after the storm, being a little boy, one of the things that he talked about the horror. He talked about the experience of going outside and seeing the devastation that the storm had left. And so Mr. Harris became a very, very dear friend of ours. And after Mr. Harris passed, we began having after-death communications with him. He was as sharp as a tack when he passed, and he was so ready to die. And he was one of those people that I could sit down with and we could talk about death and dying. He craved for that conversation. How many of you have ever been with somebody who is in the process of dying or who knows that they're very, very ill and that possibly their situation is terminal, but you just don't know how to talk to them about it? You feel awkward. You're afraid of saying the wrong thing. That's something else we'll be discussing on down the line. How do we talk about this topic? You know, a bunch of us are baby boomers. And as baby boomers, what we are doing is we are caring for aging parents. And a lot of our parents don't know how to talk about death and dying because they come from a generation where they thought that it was best to keep such topics in the closet. And also, oftentimes, what's interesting about elderly people is that they're afraid they're going to upset us. When we let them know that we're not going to be upset, if they need to talk, they're more open to talking, just like Mr. Harris was. So Mr. Harris used to sit on his chair and he would say, "Why won't I go? Why am I still here?" And he would get so upset because he really wanted to be with his wife. A lot of widows and widowers have the experience after the passing of their partner of communication. As one man said to me just a couple of weeks ago, after my wife passed, I started seeing her around the house. She looked as solid as you. But of course, I couldn't tell anybody about it because they would think I was crazy. In centuries gone by, after-death communication was a very, very common phenomenon that people talked about openly. It's only been in the last 100 years that we've stopped talking about it. Well, Mr. Harris, being the character that he was, after he passed away, at 2 o'clock in the morning, his house alarm would go off. And so my husband would get out of bed and rub his eyes, and he'd grab our big old furry dog, and I'd hand him a baseball bat, and I'd say, "Go next door and see what's going on at Mr. Harris's house." And so he'd pad on over there, and he'd walk into the house. We had a key, and he'd look around to see if everything was okay, and then he'd go over to the alarm pad, and he'd click it off, and then he'd pad back to bed. The next night, the same thing would happen again. There would go the alarm one more time. He'd get up, pull on his shorts, get the leash around the hairy dog, march on over there, hit the alarm pad, and turn the thing off again. Well, this went on for several weeks. Now, being awakened every morning at 2 o'clock gets a bit old after a while. So what he did is he called the family and he said, "Something's going on. Your alarm system must be broken." And so the relatives of Mr. Harris, they came over, and what they did is they disconnected the alarm system. Michael and I looked at each other and we thought, "Oh, tonight we're going to have uninterrupted sleep. It's going to be just wonderful." Well, didn't matter that the alarm system was shut off. 2 o'clock in the morning, there it went again. And after 5 nights of that, we decided that Mr. Harris was just having one last laugh with us. And after we acknowledged that it must be Mr. Harris, you know what happened? The alarm stopped going off. How many of you out there listening have, after the loss of a loved one, experienced strange electrical things around the house, where radios suddenly turn on by themselves or televisions turn on by themselves? Science will tell us that this is a faulty wire or the batteries have gone dead. But what's so interesting is that in collecting these accounts, and I've collected more than 2,000 of these accounts over the last 5 years, what's interesting is that everything can be running fine, just fine, but then with the passing of a loved one, suddenly there are interesting things that are happening that can't be explained. But of course, our consciousness, our egos, want to tell us that what is going on has an explanation. What we're going to do with this show is we're going to take a look at how some of those things don't have an explanation, and I'm going to provide for you an avenue for asking questions about maybe some of the experiences that you've had or loved ones you know have had that you've tried talking about with your clergy, with maybe your helping professional, your physician, maybe other family members, and they look at you as if you have just lost your mind. So I moved to Galveston probably 15 years ago because I really decided I wanted to be in a place that was rich with acceptance, where I could go and I could talk about some of these unusual activities that I had experienced, and I could receive back from the people living on this small island information from them that was similar to mine. So I'm hoping that that's something that we'll be able to do on the show with each other. And this is going to be a call-in show, and we're going to have different topics. We're going to be talking about different types of death and dying experiences. We're going to be talking about different avenues of spirituality. The other thing that I will throw in periodically, we're going to talk about other types of death too. Sometimes many of us are walking around and we're feeling dead inside and we're physically alive and we don't know why we feel so down and out and blue. So periodically what we will discuss other types of death, the death of a relationship. Yes, I'm going to go back to some of my roots, and we'll discuss the death of maybe a dream that we had at one time. Maybe we aren't being the people that we think we should be. Maybe we're covering it up with alcohol and drugs, and maybe with food, or maybe we're in a job situation that we're not happy with. So periodically, not very often, but every once in a while, we're going to talk about the other forms of grief, because that is something that I do deal with day to day. So anyway, I live on this island where we had this incredible storm that took 6,000 to 8,000 people. 4,000 homes were leveled. And so we live here with our ghosts. When the waters finally did recede, it was devastation, absolute devastation. Not long ago, a woman friend came to me and she said, "I live in a house over on the other side of the island, and every once in a while there's just a horrible, horrible smell in it. It smells like dead fish." And so my sister and I went over to her house, and it was a beautiful house. I mean, it was drop dead, scrape perfection, everything in its place clean, and it did have a funny smell. And then my sister was walking down the hall, and all of a sudden she was confronted with a white light out of nowhere. And the white light moved past her. It was a very dark hall. There was no way for lights to come in to this area of the house. It moved past her, and when it moved past her, she felt a chill. And so I said to my friend, "Well, you know what you might want to do? You might want to look up the history of the house that you lived in." She lived in a very old house. And what she discovered was that there was some tragedy that had taken place in the house. So it seems to me that this life, this physical life that we're involved in the here and now, right now, isn't all there is. And I come from a very scientifically minded background. I'm a clinician by education, and I was taught statistics and given information on different types of neurosis and psychosis and pharmacology, and just learned a lot about the biology of the individual. And for years, I too believed that there was nothing after a passing. And it wasn't until I began having some experiences of my own that I recognized that there were things out there that I didn't understand at all. And so I began to learn. So in Galveston, we have some very interesting places where people can go. If you ever visit the island, you can go down to the Strand and you can learn about the history. And you may be one of those individuals who does see something. I found this incredible after-death communication. I believe that when people report hauntings or they report visions of ghosts, what they're actually experiencing is something called an after-death communication. And there are several of us who research these. I have a friend named Raymond Moody. Perhaps some of you have read some of his books. He's called the Godfather of the Near-Death Experience. He wrote incredible books on the NDE, a near-death experiences, an experience where someone has a brush with death. It can be in a hospital, it can be a car accident, some sort of life-threatening experience. And during that experience, they have the sensation of being out of their body. And there have been reports from individuals who have had these experiences of looking down on scenes where their body is laying below. Another friend of mine named Kenneth Ring, he's a wonderful man. He also researches near-death experiences. Others out there, Melvin Morse, Dr. Melvin Morse, a pediatrician, investigates after-death communications, near-death experiences, and departing visions, or what I like to call deathbed vision experiences. Jeffrey Long, he's a cardiologist. He has been investigating experiences of this type for many years. So there are some very reputable people out there who are scientifically looking at these encounters. But in Galveston, returning to Galveston, we have people who will say, I think I saw a ghost. I saw something very unusual. There are two types of experiences. When people report ghost experiences, what I say to them is, possibly you had an encounter with somebody who has died, who the personality of that person is still here for some reason. On down the line, we'll take a look at that in a show. But then there are other experiences which I believe are an imprinting on the environment where an individual sees a scene that happens over and over and over again that's related to a death. And so I want to share a couple Galveston-related experiences with you. 2 years ago, me and a friend were doing a special research project on Galveston ghost stories. This is a woman who posted this story on the net. You can find it if you go to About Travel. You can find the whole story. And trust me, there are really a number of ghost stories in Galveston. We started our research at the public library in Galveston. We got lots of interviews from workers who had witnessed some really strange things, from lights being turned on all by themselves to a special bell kept in the library that kept ringing by itself. The Galveston Library has always had the reputation of being haunted. The interviews were exceptional, and the recorder I used worked great in the library. But the minute I stepped out of it, the whole interview was erased. My strange happenings did not end there. See, the thing that's so interesting, when we have these experiences, if we have just one encounter, let's say a favorite relative has passed, and then all of a sudden we're awakened in the middle of the night, and we look at the end of our bed, and we see that favorite relative looking whole and healthy as opposed to unhealthy if they had been sick. And the message they are relaying to us is that they are well and that they love us and that they're moving on. Initially, we're overwhelmed with the experience. We're overwhelmed with the experience of the paranormal. But then as time goes on, the ego kicks in, and we come up with rationalizations for why we had that experience. But when we have a second experience, that makes us think. After I went to a historical house called Ashton Villa, that's a beautiful house on this island, so this woman, she actually hit both of the places on the island that have a lot of activity. The building is supposed to be haunted with a woman's spirit, and if you ride past the house late at night, you will see her staring out of the house's picture windows. This woman, this particular woman, was a real character. Her name was Betty. And since we're talking a little bit about Galveston, my hometown, we're talking a little bit about the storm. Basically, Betty, what she did is she threw out lines to people who were being washed away by the storm. People were literally being washed away. And so Betty, who was a wealthy island businesswoman, who was married to a wealthy island businessman, she was a socialite on the island, and who lived in this luxurious Victorian house, what she did when tragedy hit, she was there to help. And so she has a wonderful reputation on this island, and the house that was built is just beautiful. Just for fun, my friend and I took a picture of one of the windows. We saw nothing at the time of our taking of the picture. But when we got back, when we got the pictures back, what we saw was amazing. There she was, standing in our picture, dressed in white, holding a child. So what happens for folks who have two experiences, one is always a bit overwhelming, but when you have two of these experiences, sometimes that lights a fire under us, and so what we do is we start listening to radio shows like this and some of the other radio shows that are listed on this wonderful site that I'm now involved in, and it's such a pleasure to be involved with. And what we do is we go through this sort of, I call it, it's a searching process. All of a sudden there's a light that's been lit under us. Maybe we've been kind of living in a day-to-day existence where we raise our families, we go to work, we may or may not attend church. We don't really pay a whole lot to the spiritual side of us. And then we have some sort of tragic experience, a death or a loss, or we're confronted with some unusual encounter, as this woman was when she came to visit Galveston Island. She visited the two houses on the island that have lots of activity. What that does for us is that causes us to question. We start questioning, and we want to learn more. So what we're going to do with this show is we're going to learn. We're going to get information about some of the things that happen with regard to life after death and grief and death in general. As I said, I have spent the last several years collecting experiences of this nature. And one of the things that I decided to do was I wanted to see if there was consistency, if there was consistency with these experiences. So for these last few minutes, what I'd like to do is I'd like to sort of shake you up a little bit. So many people will ask me, is this just a Christian experience? And I'll say, no, it's not. And they'll say, do Jews have experiences of this nature? And I'll say, yes, they do. As a matter of fact, not long ago, I decided to see if I could collect accounts of this nature from the Jewish community, because I was hearing from individuals, well, this isn't a Jewish experience, it's just a Christian experience or a New Age experience. And so what I did is I put out a call for accounts, and what I've got sitting here on my desk is I've got a huge, thick folder full of accounts from individuals of the Jewish faith who have had after-death communications, or they have experienced a departing vision, or they have had a near-death experience, or they have had premonitions of experiences to come. But sadly, they didn't have anybody to talk to. And so oftentimes what happens is I end up being the first person they share this information with. And they will say, they will type confidential. This is confidential information. Do not share it with anybody. But periodically I will get some of these accounts where people will say, please, please feel free to share. Please, please share. And so a number of years ago, I had one of my books called One Last Hug Before I Go. It was translated into Portuguese. And interestingly enough, immediately I received an email from a woman who said, I want to congratulate you and tell you I like this book so much. And also let you know it made me so comfortable because I lost my father about a month ago. He had a heart attack and it was devastating. But before he died, a strange thing happened. 2 weeks before he died, I had dreams of him, and the dreams involved him being with my dead mother. My English is not that good because I'm from Brazil. But you know what? Since I've read your book, and since I've had this experience, I want to read more books just like this. So here we have somebody from a different country who is reporting what is called an after-death communication and a departing vision. Oftentimes we have departing visions which come in dream form. Oh, a number of years ago, my grandmother passed away, and she was one of these stoic women who her parents had immigrated from Russia. They had escaped Stalin and all of the abuse and murder and the gulags and all the horrible things that were going over there. And then they came to this country, and my grandmother was born in this country, and she worked very hard at being American. She would love the decorations I have in my front yard right now, all the wonderful Halloween goodies. And she helped raise me, too. But she was one of those people who had come from trauma. Her parents had been traumatized. They lost most of their relatives on her side in Russia, never heard from them again. And so she had a real hard time with spirituality, too. And she was scared to death of funerals. She would not go to funerals. Couldn't talk to her about death and dying. She never wanted to talk about it. But when she passed away, I had a very unusual dream. She was a very tall, elegant woman with lots of blonde hair piled high on top of her head. And she was married to my grandfather, and my grandfather was a politician, and so, of course, she always had to look American divine when she went out in public. And I was just grieving terribly that she was gone. And a few months after her death, I had a dream that imprinted on me. That's the last thing I'm going to talk about tonight. I'm going to talk to you about how you can tell these experiences are special because they imprint. They're not like regular day-to-day experiences or regular dreams. These sort of encounters, waking up and seeing a loved one at the foot of the bed, having a premonition that grandma is going to pass away and you're on the other side of the country and all of a sudden you get a phone call and you hear that she has passed away. These experiences, they stay with us throughout a lifetime, but we don't know who to talk to about them. I'm going to be that person who you can talk to about these things because I'm not going to tell you that you're hallucinating or that you need to go seek out psychiatric help or that you're going to hell in a handbasket. So many clergy have a hard time with these experiences. But in this dream, I was in my grandmother's very, very white kitchen, and all of a sudden she walked in a long purple dress, and she grabbed me by the shoulders, and I knew that she was dead. And she grabbed me by the shoulders and she shook me and she said, get over it. And I immediately knew what that meant. What that meant was I was supposed to be living in the here and now. If we can't embrace death, we cannot embrace life. And so it's going to be my task, and it's going to be your task too, to call in. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to be doing another show. My show is only going to air every other week, and it's only going to air for an hour because I think that discussions rotating around death and dying can get to be a bit too much for some people, especially in our culture. But what we're going to do during that time is we're going to share with one another. So I'm going to have topics. Our next topic, we're going to be discussing how other cultures look at death and how that's so different from life in the States, how other cultures openly embrace death and dying, and they see it as a continuation. They don't see it as the end. And we're going to talk about how we as a culture can make some changes with regard to this. One of the things that I want to end with is I want to end today with, it's Halloween, gang. Halloween is just a few days away. As I said, I've got all my goodies hanging on my trees. And do you know that Halloween is the one time of the year that we can talk safely about death and dying? And it's the one time of the year that our children can ask us questions about death and dying. We dress up as skeletons and we dress up as witches. And if you get online and if you plug into your search engine, the origins of Halloween, what you discover is that Halloween basically is based in death and dying. Halloween was based on a pagan holiday that had to do with the end of the growing season. It had to do with the harvest. And it had to do with, it was a recognition that life comes in cycles, that we are born, we bloom, and then it's time for us to move on. So when your children ask you questions about Halloween as they're sitting there, or your grandchildren, their little skeleton costumes, what you can do is you can give them some accurate information. I think it's a travesty that so many religious organizations have decided that Halloween is a holiday that is detrimental to our youth. I remember as a kid having Halloween parties at school, and we'd talk about being ghoulish, and we'd talk about being ghosts, and it was a great avenue for educating with regard to death and dying. We don't allow our children to experience death and dying, and that's why we have so much phobia in the United States today. And the bottom line is, today we don't know how to talk about death and dying. But Halloween provides you with an opportunity to begin doing that, to begin taking a look at the pagan rituals that originated as a consequence to Halloween. On Halloween, there is this belief that from the original pagan holiday, the spirits come back. Everybody who has died in the previous year, it's their chance to come back. And so we have to scare them away. So I'm going to leave you with that thought. And I am so glad that you took the time to tune in and to join me. And we had a little bit of, we had some technical difficulty, but we got that taken care of. And so I would like to say thank you for visiting, and we will see you soon.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.